had a few ask if, as far as I know, Becky and Will are on their way home, maybe getting close to home, and nobody broke any legs, so I was wrong. You know, we went with Missy's parents one time, and I think it was in June, to Estes Park, and there was snow when we got up there. So I don't even know why you would want to go in December when there are oceans in this country that you can go to. But to each his own, right? I guess that's the idea. I hope everybody had a good Christmas, and we're going to move on from those lessons. A few years ago, in 1347, the Black Plague was raging through Europe, and thousands of people died, and many people saw that as a judgment from God. And so, hoping to appease God's wrath, the citizens of Lübeck, Germany, surrounded the churches and the monasteries of their city and offered enormous amounts of money and riches. The monks and priests of one of these monasteries were very afraid of contamination, and so they barred their gates, and they would not let any of the citizens enter. So the persistent crowds began to throw valuables and coins and gold and jewels over the walls. And this frightened the monks even more, and they began throwing it all back. Money and valuables went back and forth for quite a while, for hours, until the monks finally gave up, and they just allowed the riches to remain. Within hours, piles 3 to 4 feet high began to rise. And for months following the incident, some say even years, the money sat there untouched. Well, why did the people of that town in Germany want to give their money? Well, they thought that it was going to give them life. And the monks were just the opposite. They didn't want to take the money because they thought the money would bring them death. And the tragic situation of the 14th century there in Germany illuminates two basic views of money. There are those that believe that money can bring them life, that money can buy them wealth and security. It can get them enjoyment of life. It can bring them health, ultimately an avoidance of death. The healthier you are, the less likely you are to die. But is that really true? Well, that's not necessarily true. We know that money can't buy you security. Jesus said, "Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, or where thieves do break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Money can't protect any of us from decay or theft or loss. Nobody or nothing can save you in this world from that. And money really can't help you have more enjoyment in life. There's a man who wrote a book by the name of Ray Stedman, and he spoke about speaking to the wealthy people that lived in Florida. And he said this, that he found that most of these, by their own testimony, though they had all the money to buy anything that they wanted, had arrived in a place where they were suffering what someone had so aptly called destination sickness. And that is the condition of having everything that you want, but not wanting anything that you have. And being sick and empty and lonely and miserable because you can do anything that you want to do. Sounds real tough, doesn't it? But money can't help you conquer death. And Jesus told this parable. Jesus said that the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops." And he said, "I'll do this. I will tear down my barns and I'll build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is this the one who lays up for his treasure for himself and who is not rich toward God?'" So the Bible tells us that money can't buy us security. It can't buy contentment. It can't buy protection from death. In short, money cannot buy life. So if money can't buy life, does money bring death? I mean, that's sort of what Paul was saying here in 1 Timothy 6, wasn't it? Where he says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Isn't that what it says? That's not really what it says, is it? That's not what Timothy 6:10 says. It doesn't say that money is the root of all evil. It says the love of money does that. It doesn't say that some people, because of money, have wandered away from the faith. It says some people craving for money have wandered away from the faith. And so money in and of itself is not an evil thing. Solomon would say this in Ecclesiastes 5:19, that everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is a gift from God. Deuteronomy 8:18 tells us this. It says, you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. So money is not necessarily a bad thing. We need money. We use money to pay bills, our taxes, to buy gasoline for our cars, to heat and supply electricity for our homes, the groceries on our tables, and to give God his portion. God never condemns money, nor did he condemn wealthy people per se. Abraham was a very wealthy man, as were Isaac and Jacob and David and Solomon and Esther. There are a number of great men and women in Scripture who were very well off financially. So money, again, isn't necessarily a bad thing. But it's when money becomes our God. It's when we end up worshiping it when it becomes a bad thing. Money is either a God in our minds or it's God's tool in our hand. And I'll just say that one more time, that money is either a God in our minds or it's God's tool in our hand. It all depends on who we think the money belongs to. And that's the importance of that verse there in Deuteronomy 8:18. And I'll read that again, that you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you a power to get wealth, and that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. One man said that all the money is tainted. And I'm not even happy that I'm reading this, but it taint yours and it taint mine. And so if it taint yours and it taint mine, who does it belong to? Well, the Bible tells us it belongs to God. And this is particularly true for those of us who are Christians. The book of Romans tells us that when we became Christians, part of what we did was confess with our mouth that Jesus is Lord. Well, what does it mean to call Jesus our Lord? Well, it means that we give him authority over everything that we possess. As Christians, everything that I have and you have in your wallets should belong to Jesus. Now, we all give a certain portion to God as an offering each Sunday, but really everything that we have belongs to him. I use his money to pay my bills, to pay for my home, vehicle, and other items. He owns everything I possess. Now that is the theology of money. But how do I know if my theology is my reality? In other words, how do I know if my money has me or if my God has my money? Well, it's a matter about how I view my money. For example, if we look at this verse from Ephesians chapter 4:28, Paul here is talking to new Christians and he says this. He says, let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone who is in need. Now notice there, what is the first thing a converted thief must do? He's to no longer steal. But if that's all a thief did was to not steal, then he's not been changed. A thief that isn't stealing is just maybe in between jobs or is an unemployed thief. God expects the thief to change how he lives. And so what must a thief do to take the place of stealing? Well, Paul says there to work, to do something useful. Well, why would that thief need to work? And the Bible tells us to share with those in need. In other words, it's not enough for a thief to just stop stealing. It's not enough for a thief to just get a regular job. The only way that a thief stops being a thief is when he begins to use the money that he's earned to help others less fortunate than themselves. Up until that point in his life, money had possessed him and not the other way around. Until he's learned the habit of giving money away, it has owned him. And really, we start out as children thinking that way. We start out believing that what we have is ours. And I'm going to read you what is called the toddler's creed. And it says, if I want it, it's mine. If I gave it to you and changed my mind later, it's mine. If I can take it away from you, it's mine. If I had it a little while ago, it's mine. If it's mine, it will never belong to you or anyone else, no matter what. If you are building something together, all the pieces are mine. If it looks just like it's mine, then it's mine. Well, have you ever known a child to behave that way? Well, we probably can know ourselves a little bit. And if those children aren't careful, they will grow up to be adults who think that is still true. This toddler's creed is the creed of many people when it comes to money. And in order for God to heal us of this creed, we need to change how we handle money. And that's why Paul here is telling Timothy to teach the rich to give their money away. And again, just beginning in verse 17 of 1 Timothy 6, Paul says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasures for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. And you'll notice here what Paul is trying to say to the rich. Now he's saying, if you want to avoid being trapped by your money, if you really want to start trusting God and taking hold of a life that is truly life, then you need to be rich in good deeds and be generous and be willing to share. That is really the cure for having a love of money, is to give it away. And you'll notice that God isn't saying to give away all the money. He is telling them to get used to the idea of giving away a sum on a regular basis. How much should a rich man give to the poor? Well, I like the story of Colonel Sanders. Colonel Sanders, of course, we know maybe second to Popeye, but some of the greatest fried chicken in our great country. But Colonel Sanders attributed his success to his tenacity and perseverance when presenting the right product at the right time with that chicken. But there's another side to the Colonel's success that we don't really talk about very often. When he started trying to sell his recipe for Kentucky Fried Chicken, he had no money. He was bankrupt, and he slept in his car as he tried to sell individual restaurants his famous recipe. But before it began to sell, he had prayed to God, and he made a vow to God that he would give 50% of his income to the work of the church. And so the local Church of Christ that he attended benefited greatly, as did many Bible colleges, as he gave gifts and endowments, as well as tuition and books that he paid for so young men could become ministers. Sanders didn't just give a tenth or a twentieth of his income. He gave 50%. Now really, God owned his money, and his money did not own him. Well, is that only true for the rich? Are they the only ones that are controlled by their money? Well, no, that's false as well. All you have to do really is make your way down to the nearest convenience store and just watch people stand in line as they buy those little pieces of paper for $5 or $10 or $20, and just the hopes that they're going to make it big. Now, just an aside here, even for gamblers, lottery tickets are a poor gamble. The rate of return for the purchase of the tickets is well below the percentage of any other form that gambling gives. But people will buy these tickets in droves. And why? Money can control anyone in any walk of life. So if giving away money works for the wealthy to cure them of this disease, how can the poor give away their money? Well, that's a good question. Isaiah talks a little bit about fasting, and that's a good way for those without a lot of money. Isaiah 58, 6-9 says this, "Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and bring the homeless poor into your house? And when you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. And then you shall call, and the Lord will answer, and you shall cry, and he will say, 'Here I am.'" So you see, you don't have to be rich to use your money for God. You don't have to be rich to free up your resources to help the poor. Fasting can free up money that you would have otherwise spent. So if you don't eat, you now have money to share with the poor and hungry. But the Bible doesn't command us to fast. This is an entirely voluntary decision on our part. But God says, if you do choose to use this tool of fasting, you choose to do that to give money away, I'm going to be so grateful that your light will break forth like the dawn. You will experience healing, and your righteousness will shine before his throne. God says, if you do this, I'll have your back, and I will attentively listen to your prayers. So what if you have diabetes or some other condition that requires you to eat regular meals? Well, you can take away other things you indulge in every day, whether it's buying a newspaper or buying a meal at a restaurant. If you want to please God and honor his wish to help the poor, then these forms of fasting work as well. Now the point is this, either money is a tool for God or it is an idol for us. If I don't find a way to use my money for God, I'll end up letting it become my God. But I want to find a way to use money for God that will ensure it will always be God's and not mine. Well, one writer tells of a time that he and his wife had dinner with a blue blood Boston family. And this man's home was not extravagant, and the meal wasn't served on fine china and silverware. This wealthy man lived in a very modest house. And noticing this, the writer asked, "How in the world did you grow up in the midst of such wealth and not be consumed by materialism?" And his answer was this. He said, "My parents taught us that everything in our home was either an idol or a tool." And so the question becomes, what are you looking for? Are you looking for your chance at wealth? Are you intent on finding your pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? Or are you looking for the kind of God that Jesus describes in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 24? There Jesus says that no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, or what you will eat, or what you will drink, nor about your body, or what you put on it. Is life not more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more value than them? And which of you, by being anxious, adds a single hour to the span of his life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, 'What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?'" I'll close with this story of about Dell Evans, the wife of cowboy star Roy Rogers. And she said at one time, "All my life I searched for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But what I found that I really needed was at the foot of the cross." And so this morning, here is your chance. It is either the pot at the end of the rainbow or God's love at the foot of the cross. Which will you choose this morning as together we stand and we sing?